Will climate change force you to move? Depending on where you live, it may seem like a remote possibility. But as wildfires, floods, and other climate-related disasters start hitting closer to home, it's already becoming a reality for many Americans. In the new book, The Great Displacement: Climate Change and the Next American Migration, author Jake Biddle argues that this pattern is only going to become more stark in years to come. Jake is a journalist who's written for The New York Times, The Guardian, Harper's Magazine, and other publications. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
My name is Jake Biddle, and I'm the author of The Great Displacement, and it's a book about how climate change is already causing people to move in the United States. So the reporting process for this book took more than a year and involved interviewing several hundred people who had experienced some form of climate displacement in the United States. And in the course of reporting the book, I sort of emerged with a few big takeaways for how to understand climate change and how to describe the movement of people in the United States as a result of climate change. The first is a pretty basic one, and it's that I think a lot of people in the United States still see climate change as something that's to be talked about mostly in the future tense. You know, it may happen in the future, or maybe it's happening already in other parts of the world, but not so much here in the United States. My takeaway is that that's pretty much wrong. I mean, we don't really think about a lot of these things in connection with climate change, but already tens of thousands of people lose their homes to climate disasters in the United States every year. And a substantial portion of those people never really make it back to the original homes that they occupied before the disasters. Climate change disasters such as like droughts and sea level rise are also sort of revising the way that local economies work in the desert, or coastal parts of the Gulf of Mexico, making it impossible for people to continue with the jobs that they had had before or to live in places that were once affordable. So it's making things more expensive, more difficult, and altogether kind of dicier in a lot of the most vulnerable parts of the country. A lot of this motion and movement is sort of hard to recognize, or it's not really talked about in the mainstream media because most coverage of climate disasters focuses on the immediate impacts of a hurricane or a wildfire. But it doesn't really follow the years-long process of recovery and relocation that takes place after the fact. So my goal with the book was to kind of shed a light on the really long and turbulent process of movement that follows these disasters and show the implications of that movement for how we understand concepts like home or upward mobility in the middle class and sort of revise our understanding of stability, sort of show how climate change is going to unsettle our big concepts about home and what it means to live in a certain place for one's entire life. The second big takeaway from the book is that the way that we in the United States respond to climate disasters is really, really broken, and it doesn't work. So a lot of people are familiar with the main federal disaster agency, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and they basically know that the point of FEMA is to come in after a disaster and help a place rebuild. And there's a lot of things that are wrong with this. I mean, the first part is that FEMA is really underfunded and really understaffed, and it really doesn't have the resources to help a community that gets hit by a hurricane or a wildfire recover back to its original state. The second problem, which is sort of on the opposite side of the coin, is that FEMA is really rigid and has really outdated practices. And the way that it responds to most disasters is basically to rebuild the community exactly the way it was to whatever extent that they can. And so the problem with that is that a lot of these communities, you know, along the Gulf of Mexico or in the mountainous parts of California, were really never should have been built the way that they were built. They're extremely vulnerable to sea level rise, to wildfire, to drought stresses, to big storms. And if we just rebuild all the houses, streets, and other buildings the way that they were before, then it's just going to happen again. And this has happened in a lot of flood-prone parts of the country, as FEMA has paid to rebuild the same homes upwards of 7 or 8 times in some cases. So this is really overdue for a revamp. And I think a lot of the reason for the movement that we're experiencing after these disasters is that the agency just doesn't really have the wherewithal to really help a long-term recovery or assist people as they try to get back on their feet. So that results in this kind of chaotic movement everywhere, and it also results in some places being sort of perennially hit by the same disasters over and over again, which over time is going to lead those places to disintegrate. So in some parts of North Carolina that are really prone to flooding, or in coastal parts of Louisiana, there's these places that have just been hit over and over and over again. And the federal government doesn't do a really good job of sort of taming, you know, the risk that's in those places and changing them around so that they could sort of be more resilient to those disasters, maybe building flood walls or moving towns back from the river. They don't really do that. Instead, they just sort of, to whatever extent they can, they just rebuild things as they were. And that's a big reason for a lot of the suffering and destitution that I tried to document in the book. The third and related takeaway is that a lot of the places where we're seeing the most sort of displacement and devastation from climate change are places where we've engaged in really, really risky construction and built in places where we really shouldn't have. So a lot of the towns that have been devastated by flooding are ones where we've built thousands of homes in what FEMA classified as perennially vulnerable flood zones. A lot of the towns that have burned down in wildfires are places where we've built in what's called the wildland-urban interface, part of the forest that's just destined to burn as part of the natural life cycle of forest regeneration. This is especially true in the American Southwest, where a lot of the biggest cities like Phoenix and Tucson were built thanks to extremely audacious water infrastructure that moved water from really, really far away places to these cities so that people could live there and irrigate agriculture. But now they're running short on water thanks to a drought, and their infrastructure is not quite working anymore. I think a big important part of discussing climate change is discussing the kind of society that climate disasters are impacting. And it's not just about nature getting more devastating, or hurricanes getting stronger, or wildfires getting bigger. It's also about certain vulnerabilities that have been there the whole time, certain sort of cracks in the society that we've built, getting wider and wider, and climate change sort of putting an extra level of stress on an already really fragile society. So in many cities or rural areas where there's sort of shoddy infrastructure, cities that were built in places where we really never should have tried to reclaim all this land from the river or push development as far as we could into the desert, what I was sort of finding is that if you looked into the history of every place that had suffered a big climate disaster, you could almost always find a really bad development decision or a local government that had been way too audacious about encouraging new construction. I think that's a really, really important part of this, is that you can't really discuss climate change in isolation from the societies that are impacted by it. The fourth takeaway is that migration doesn't look at all like we think it does. When we think of climate migration, a lot of us think of a person who leaves an area, perhaps on the other side of the world. They intentionally choose to escape climate disaster, and they end up moving very far away to a place that's more temperate. And what I found is that it really doesn't look like this in the United States, and it really doesn't look like this anywhere. Most movements are involuntary, and they're driven not by somebody having a psychological desire to avoid future climate disasters, but it just becomes too expensive to live where they live, or they can't afford to rebuild their home, and so they really have no choice but to move. A lot of people in the places that are experiencing the greatest level of displacement, they really are extremely attached to the homes that they are leaving behind, and they really don't want to move. And when they do move, they move relatively short distances. They don't really move one time either. They sort of inaugurate after a disaster this process of relocation and rebuilding, and then they move again, and they move again, or maybe they move back, maybe they leave again. It's just never as simple as moving from point A to point B. I think it's really important when we discuss this sort of emerging term, climate migration, to remember that migration isn't always intentional, it's not always purposeful. It's usually very agonizing, which we already understand, but it's also not something that just begins and ends very quickly. Like, it can go on for years, and it often ends somebody moving right back to the place that they lived before, especially because the government doesn't really do anything to encourage people to live in places that are less risky. I always liken it in the book, I say it's not really like an arrow, you know, shooting from a bow to a target. It's more like the way that a pot or a cauldron kind of churns as it reaches a boiling point, and things sort of start to move around and they swirl, and it's very frothy, it's very chaotic. And in the aftermath of a hurricane or a wildfire, people move in really random seeming ways, and it takes a while for a pattern of long-term regional relocation to emerge. And I think in terms of a long-term movement from the south or from the driest places, you know, up to the more temperate places, we really won't see that for a few decades. And for the next few decades, we're just going to see this sort of constant collision and relocation as people sort of seek out safe and affordable homes as close as possible to their existing social ties. The last and most important, I think, takeaway from the book is that climate change is going to force us to rethink two sort of big ideas about home and what home means. The first is about home ownership, which for a long time, for many people in the American middle class, has been the sort of anchor of their wealth and their central sort of path to economic advancement, right? So your home is your biggest investment. It's worth more than basically everything else that you own combined. And you're supposed to be able to keep that home and sell it for more money later. And as climate change gets more severe, a lot of people are losing those investments. And a lot of people are finding that the places that they live are becoming so expensive that they can't afford to own a home. So I think that sort of picture of middle-class stability, which was always sort of inaccessible for many people in this country, is going to become even more inaccessible for many people in places like Miami, in places like the Gulf of Mexico. They're either going to lose their homes to climate disasters, or they're going to find that the cost of insurance, mortgage loans are getting so severe that they can't keep up, and that they're either just sort of driven out into this sort of purgatory of renting or living with family after disasters, and they never make it back to that middle-class stability. So that's something that over the next few decades is going to get harder and harder for a lot of people to access. The second idea that I think climate change is going to force us to rethink is this sort of idea of home being a place that you're from or your forever home. Most people that I spoke to, they lived in one place for their whole lives. They never really thought that they'd leave. And after a disaster, they sort of had to let go of those places, right? And so I think that a lot of people in the United States define themselves based on where they're from or where they live or where they grew up. And for a lot of those people, not all of them, of course, I mean, many people will remain safe, but a lot of those people are going to have to let go of the places that they most strongly identify with, because the costs of rebuilding them and maintaining them are just going to be too high. And that's going to cause a lot of not only economic pain, but psychological and emotional pain for people as the decades go on.
Thank you, Jake. That was Jake Biddle with five big ideas from The Great Displacement, Climate Change and the Next American Migration. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.